It's 4 hours universal time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The Ebola death toll now exceeds 5,400. Sierra Leone's north and west described as having intense transmission of the deadly virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization has raised the death toll in West Africa's Ebola epidemic to more than 5,400, with greater than 15,000 known cases. The latest figures represent nearly 250 new fatalities and more than 700 cases through November 16. The agency says Sierra Leone suffers intense transmission in its north and west and the capital, Freetown. A WHO representative to Freetown says the goal is zero cases. And after Ebola, the UN resident coordinator, David McLaughlin Carr, says the goal will be to protect the country's economy.
So we are working very, very much with the government to ensure that we are plugging the gaps that are being felt in this, in the economy and in the society of Sierra Leone as a result of Ebola. I'm very proud that last Friday, the Minister for Finance launched the first socio-economic impact study of Ebola in Sierra Leone. This was presented in Parliament with the 2015 budget, and this is the collaborative effort of the United Nations Development Programme with the World Bank, with the International Monetary Fund and the African Development Bank.
Meanwhile, a Cuban doctor infected with the disease while working in Sierra Leone is the latest in a line of hundreds of health workers to have contracted Ebola. Dr. Felix Baez Saria is one of more than 160 Cuban health workers in Sierra Leone. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Wednesday said her government has the upper hand in the fight against Ebola, but warned against complacency and against a reduction in international support. The WHO says while having the highest death rate, the number of cases in Liberia is slowing. This is VOA News. The United Nations says pro-government forces and Islamist militia fighting for control of Libya's key eastern city Benghazi have agreed to a humanitarian 12-hour truce. It will allow the Libyan Red Crescent to evacuate civilians, remove bodies, and tend to the wounded. U.S. spokesman Jeff Rathke said this is a welcome development.
We welcome this announcement and the reports that the parties are adhering to the ceasefire. We call on all Libyans to support the ceasefire, to allow the Red Crescent to evacuate civilians from affected areas, and to allow affected civilians the opportunity to address their immediate humanitarian needs. Libya's problems are political in nature and require a political solution, so we fully support the efforts of the UN Special Representative and urge all parties to cooperate with him.
Hundreds of people have been killed since the launch of a government-backed offensive against Islamist militia who nearly took control of the city earlier this year. The army officer who briefly seized power in Burkina Faso has been named prime minister of the country's transitional government. The appointment of Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zita was announced Wednesday, a day after new interim president Michel Kafando was sworn in. No immediate reaction from the African Union, which had threatened sanctions, unless Mr. Zita returned power to a civilian-led administration. U.S. spokesman Rathke said U.S. officials are keeping an eye on the situation.
This is something we keep a close eye on. Of course, we're watching this carefully, and there's been not only attention from the United States, but the international community on the transition there. So this is something we continue to keep under scrutiny. I simply don't have a further statement on it today.
The Army named Zita head of state November 1st after longtime President Blaise Compaoré stepped down in the face of violent protests over his effort to amend the Constitution to extend his rule. A Somali-American engineer who had returned to his homeland to help its fledgling government has been killed in Somalia. Abdullahi Ali Anshur, 60 years of age, was buried Wednesday after being shot by suspected Al-Shabaab militia on Monday. Kenyan police Wednesday arrested more than 100 people in the port city of Mombasa after conducting raids on three mosques on suspicions they were undergoing militant training.
We recovered a hand grenade, some petrol bombs. We recovered a bomb detonator. We recovered a booster. We also recovered paraphernalia associated with training in jihadism.
Richard Ngatia is a police official. Authorities are trying to break up Islamist militant networks blamed for a series of attacks in Nairobi and along the Kenyan Indian Ocean coastline. Guinea, Ivory Coast, Mali, and Ghana all qualified for the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations Wednesday, but Nigeria was held to a 2-2 draw with South Africa, so it won't be able to defend its title. Egypt fell to Tunisia, failing to qualify for a third time on this final day of qualifications. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Who will represent Zambia's opposition MMD party in next year's special presidential election?
The party president has a mandate of 5 years, the flag bearer of the party. That is Dr. Nevas Mumba. He is legal or constitutionally the candidate to represent or to stand in this election.
Rafael Nakasinda is communication director for Zambia's opposition movement for multi-party democracy. Burkina Faso's opposition welcomes the appointment of a new prime minister. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's son says he will win next month's special senatorial election for Maserado County, and the economic impact of Ebola in Africa.
Importation has been grounded to a halt. In fact, exportation is now virtually zero. Our mining companies have closed down, most of them.
Alhaji Jallo is president of Sierra Leone's Importers Association. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai comments on ZANU-PF infighting. And the United Nations says conflict and insecurity worsen humanitarian crisis in the Sahel region. With those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Zambia's opposition movement for multi-party democracy, the MMD, is accusing former President Rupia Banda of trying to hijack the party's presidency through unconstitutional means. Zambia will hold a presidential by-election on January 20, 2015, to find a replacement for President Michael Sata, who died in office last month. The MMD is currently led by Nevas Mumba, but former President Rupia Banda said most members of parliament and the party's National Executive Committee want him to contest the presidency on the MMD ticket. Rafael Nakasinda, communication director in the office of party president Mumba, says the party's constitution dictates that a certain leader of the party is always its presidential candidate.
The party president has a mandate of 5 years, the flag bearer of the party. That is Dr. Nevas Mumba. He is legal or constitutionally the candidate to represent or to stand in this election. But with an unfortunate development of the former head of state, Mr. Rupia Banda, attempting to undermine and possibly secure a nomination by the party through an illegal means.
What do you mean that the former president, Rupia Banda, tried to gain the leadership through illegal means?
I mean through unconstitutional process. There is no provision within the party constitution for selecting a candidate when there is a sitting president who is eligible to stand to represent the party in an election.
Former President Rupia Banda says that the reason he wants to seek the candidacy of the party is that most members of parliament and the National Executive Committee want him to contest the presidency.
Well, unfortunately, the mandate for the president is through the convention, which involves over 1,300 delegates. Now, we only have 38 members of parliament so far, and 52 NEC members, that is the National Executive Committee members. The reason our constitution was crafted in such a way that the only body or the supreme body to determine the position of president, whether election or any disciplinary action or consideration on his position, it is the convention, not the National Executive Committee, not members of parliament. Members of parliament, the only function they have is to represent the party and the party policies when debating or passing laws in parliament.
Did former President Rupia Banda offer Mr. Mumba any money to take him out of contention?
No, there was no such thing. Unfortunately, it is the creation of those that have been employed to conduct a slander propaganda against the party president, Dr. Nevas Mumba.
Is the MMD not concerned that this inter-party wrangling could weaken your party's chances, particularly against the ruling Patriotic Front Party?
Of course, that is inevitable. In the first place, having lost elections in 2011 under the leadership of Rupia Banda, it is too fresh in the minds of the Zambian people, the reasons for which they voted us out. To that effect, we have to work twice as hard as a political party for us to enhance our chances to win.
Rafael Nakasinda is Communication Director for Zambia's Opposition Movement for Multi-Party Democracy. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The appointment of Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida as Burkina Faso's Prime Minister in a transitional administration will help ensure security and stability ahead of the country's next presidential and legislative elections, according to Ablasi Ouedraogo, a leading opposition member. He said the appointment doesn't contravene the accord signed between civil society groups, opposition parties, and the military in a bid to form a transitional government ahead of the elections. Ouedraogo tells reporter Peter Clotty that opposition and civil society groups will be part of the new government.
According to the charter, there is no restriction for the military to be appointed prime minister. Therefore, President Michel Kafando has decided to appoint Lieutenant Colonel Zida to head the government. We don't see any difficulty in it, since appointing Mr. Zida means that we are going to get stability. And don't forget that he is a military. And right now in the Sahelian region, you know that there are problems with security, and to have a military in this position could be helpful for the country.
But some Burkinabis are saying that he was part of the old order, and that is why they find it objectionable that he is chosen to form a government. What do you say to that?
Let us be serious. President Compaoré has spent 27 years in power in Burkina Faso. If you want to eliminate all the people who have worked for this regime during 27 years, do you think that you can find somebody completely neutral? No, which is not the case. The situation in Burkina Faso is that people is requesting for change. And they have got the change with the departure of President Compaoré. What we would like is to make the transition a success. And when I say a success, it is in the organization of the forthcoming presidential and legislative election at the end of the transition. If the Burkinabe to complete this exercise, let's thank God, because we are on the right way.
Now, will the opposition be part of this new government that he will put together?
Yeah, I think it will be a government comprising all the components of the society, meaning what we will get, civilian, we will get military. All of them are Burkinabe. This is the difference.
What are Burkinabe saying within the transitional period to ensure a new election is held after the transition ends?
I think that all Burkinabe feel proud of what happened. The Burkinabe were able in 2 weeks' time to solve their problem, to find a solution to the crisis in adopting the charter. And the charter is a roadmap towards the organization of the election. What we need from the government is to work hard in such a way to apply transparent, equitable elections by the end of 2015.
Ablasi Ouedraogo is the leading Burkina Faso opposition member. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Ouagadougou. One of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons says he will be an advocate on all fronts for the people of Maserato County if he is elected their senator in next month's special poll. Robert Sirleaf said he has spent the last 7 years promoting a strong development agenda for rural and urban Maserato County, particularly in the economically challenged communities. Official campaigning for those elections, which are scheduled for December 16, begins today, Thursday. About 11 candidates are contesting the Maserato County race. Among them is two-time presidential candidate and football legend George Weah. Sirleaf says he will win because his work has impacted more lives than any other candidate in the race.
In the last 9 years, we strongly felt that Maserato County has been underrepresented. We think the county of Maserato needs representation that is really the priority. It's going to be the rank in the interest of our people. Prioritizing the people is extremely important to us, providing solid leadership. Advocacy is another adjective that comes to mind about when we talk about representation. And we say advocacy not only for urban Montserrato, which at times can be a focus, for also rural Montserrato. And the people in rural Montserrato really have simple requests, simple needs. We spent the last 7 years with a very strong development agenda, and we've worked extremely hard. In urban Montserrato, we've worked extremely hard on the economically challenged communities. And in rural, you know, where the request and needs are a little bit different, we've made great impact, and we've done it at a very selfless matter. So it pretty much is exactly why we came to the conclusion that it was the best thing to do.
One of the issues confronting the city of Monrovia, which is also Montserrato County, you say, is the issue of public transportation and traffic. So what would you do if you're a senator?
I think for one thing you have to do, you have to look at it two ways. You have to provide an alternative. If you provide an alternative in terms of public transportation, people will be less wanting to use private cars. So one of the things I believe we're going to do is extremely aggressive but hard to increase access to public transportation or increase public transportation in general.
You are the son of a certain president, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Are you not concerned about the image that maybe some voters might have that you and your mother might be trying to create a dynasty should you win?
James, I think you said it right. Should you win? No, absolutely not. I'm not concerned at all with the dynasty question because, unlike in the case of a dynasty, what we have is a democratic process, fair, free, transparent voting process. The people will make their decision, and they'll make their determination. Nobody's handpicking me to do anything. Every Liberian has a constitutional right to vote and to exercise this right. I think they will make that final decision. That decision is far away from even what people consider a dynasty.
So let me put the question the other way. Is your mother behind your candidacy? Is she pushing you to run for Senate?
Not at all. None. We don't really talk about it very much at all. I'm an independent candidate. She respects my will. I treasure my independence. I have a strong will when I approach this. So absolutely not. She really doesn't have any input, and she doesn't really ask that much about it.
There's the image of George Weah.
Yeah.
Can you beat George Weah? I've already talked with George Weah. He's certain that he will win the race.
Every campaign camp should be extremely confident of their ability to win unless you should not enter this race. So the absolute answer to it is yes. If you look at our work across the county, we have outpaced very easily everybody else. We've impacted more lives than anybody else can point to. And I'm not saying you want to do districts currently in all 17. Our support is really grassroots. It's really from the people. We got really convinced that we're going to win.
Robert Sirleaf is the son of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia. You are speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai says President Robert Mugabe's exit from Zimbabwe's political arena is now inevitable, especially as internal fissures in his ruling ZANU-PF party continue to worsen. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Commenting for the first time on goings-on in ZANU-PF, the pinnacle of which has been First Lady Grace Mugabe's call for the ouster of Vice President Joyce Mujuru, opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai today said Mr. Mugabe's days in office are now numbered.
What's happening is no different from what happened in Mao Zedong's days. Mao's wife tried to take over the leadership of the Communist Party because Mao was dying. And unfortunately, the Gang of Four did not succeed. The same applied to Malawi. When Banda was dying, John Tembo and Bamaga Tzamira tried to take over the leadership of... And we're seeing history repeating itself in Zimbabwe.
The former prime minister told reporters at his party's Harvest House headquarters that credible elections are the only answer to the country's mounting economic problems.
The unfortunate thing is that it is the people who are facing the crisis. And I don't know how this lack of leadership that we are witnessing can solve the problem we are all facing. How does the fight between two women affect you having a meal on the day? How does that prevent stopping companies from closing? How does it help you in any way to solve any one of the problems that we are facing? Please, Give us a break.
Mr. Tsvangirai took a swipe at former South African President Thabo Mbeki, accusing him of working in cahoots with Mr. Mugabe to rig the 2002 elections. This comes at a time when the Mail and Guardian has successfully sought through the courts the release of the report of South Africa's Judicial Observer Mission that observed the 2002 elections in Zimbabwe. Pretoria has been blocking the release of that report for the past 12 years. The judges ruled that the elections were neither free nor fair.
When the genocide in Rwanda was taking place, the majority of African leaders remained silent about it. Likewise, when violence flared up in Zimbabwe, with innocent civilians being butchered in broad daylight, SADC countries turned a blind eye. To an extent, the spirited efforts to hide this report shows that South Africa has wittingly and unwittingly aided the subversion of democratic process in Zimbabwe.
Mr. Tsvangirai said the former president of South Africa's bias was also exhibited during a summit of the Southern African Development Community held in the Zambian capital of Lusaka in April 2008, when he suggested that a presidential runoff vote was going to be held in Zimbabwe before even the results of that year's election were announced. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The World Bank said Wednesday that it expects the Ebola outbreak will cost the African economy about $3 to $4 billion, well below a previously outlined worst-case scenario of $32 billion. But some economists paint a gloomier picture, warning the disruption to regional markets and trading is considerable. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Fields of potatoes stretch to the horizon in Timbi Madina, central Guinea. But the farmers here have no idea if they will be able to sell their crop. The Ebola epidemic is strangling the industry as borders with neighbouring countries are closed. Mamadou Diallo is from the local Farmers' Federation.
Rien n'est envisagé pour l'ouverture des frontières.
There are no plans to open the borders and the internal market is not booming. Everything is blocked, he says. So how long do we stock products for and what price will we be able to sell them at in the future? In the Sierra Leone capital of Freetown, the prices of basic goods are rising. Mohamed Kamara is a wholesale trader.
Most of the ones that really come offline really come for large quantity.
He says that most of the bulk buyers who come from the provinces are not coming to town due to Ebola because their areas have been quarantined, so the prices right now are very high. In Sierra Leone, 80% of the population works in agriculture and there has been a sharp decline in activity, says Professor Jonathan Leap, Executive Director of the International Growth Centre at the London School of Economics.
The food prices have not shown the kind of spikes that would have happened had there been shortages. What's not so good as a picture is what's happening to the level of trading and employment in these markets. There's been a 69% drop in rice traders. That's suggesting that employment and trading and buying and selling activity is dropping quite significantly.
Multinational companies are also hit. British extraction company London Mining was already suffering from plunging iron ore prices. Several workers were removed from the company's mine in Sierra Leone because of Ebola. This month, the firm declared bankruptcy. The mining sector is vital to Sierra Leone's economy, says Alhaji Jallo, president of the Sierra Leone Importers Association.
Importation has been grounded to a halt. In fact, exportation is now virtually zero. Our mining companies have closed down, most of them.
It is rarely necessary for companies in Ebola-affected regions to completely cease operations, says Dr. Katie Geary, medical director of the assistance group International SOS.
What we're trying to get them to balance is the tension between business continuity and delivering the key economic requirements for that company.
The human cost of Ebola is clear, more than 5,000 deaths to date. Analysts warn the international community must help avert an economic disaster. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Aoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations will culminate in crowning a new African champion. Despite fighting hard from a 2-0 deficit to hold their South African visitors to a 2-2 draw in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State, South Nigeria on Wednesday, African champions Nigeria Super Eagles did not muster enough points to progress to the main contest in Equatorial Guinea next January. Instead, the Republic of Congo, who pipped Sudan 1-0, along with South Africa, qualified from Group A. Elsewhere in Group B, Mali upstaged Algeria 2-0 as Ethiopia and Malawi drew 0-0. Gabon beat Lesotho 4-2 as Burkina Faso and Angola drew 1-1 in Group C. Ivory Coast and Cameroon drew 0-0 as the Democratic Republic of Congo slammed Sierra Leone 3-1 in Group D. Guinea beat Uganda 2-0 as Ghana dismissed Togo 3-1 in Group E. Zambia pipped Cape Verde Islands 1-0 as Niger and Mozambique drew 1-1 in Group F. Action. In Group G, Senegal blanked Botswana 3-0 and Tunisia edged Egypt 2-1. Consequently, the 15 teams joining hosts Equatorial Guinea for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations draws in Malabo on the 3rd of September are Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde Islands, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Republic of Congo, Gabon, Ghana, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Mali, Senegal, South Africa, Tunisia, and Zambia. Turning to athletics, the South Sudan Athletics Federation is the latest addition to the family of the World Athletics Governing Body. The IAAF Executive Council meeting disclosed in Monaco on Wednesday. Finally, in cricket, Roger Mukasa was crowned the Nile Special Uganda Sports Press Association USPA Sportsman of the Month for October in Kampala, Uganda. Mukasa, who is Uganda's opening batsman, played a pivotal role in the outstanding performance at the recent Pepsi ICC World Cricket League Division 3 tournament in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Uganda were second to defending champions Nepal and are now promoted to Division 2 League next year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, November 20th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. This is William Kofu, and I speak to you from Monrovia. It is high time that Liberia has to go through a midterm central election in the midst of Ebola. But I call all Liberians, as we engage in this campaign process, we should be mindful that Ebola still exists in our country, and we should abide by all necessary precautions and regulations given by WHO, MSF, and World Organ and international partners and other international partners. Thank you and have a happy day and as we go through a smooth and transparent election.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations says pro-government forces and Islamist militias fighting for control of Libya's key eastern city of Benghazi have agreed to a humanitarian truce. A UN spokesman, Stephane Dujarric, said the UN's brokered truce started at 7 a.m. local time Wednesday and would last for 12 hours. He said the Libyan Red Crescent planned to evacuate civilians, remove bodies, tend to the wounded, and restock food supplies. And the army officer who briefly seized power in Burkina Faso has been named prime minister of the country's transitional government. That is it for this Thursday, November 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradek, as well as Post Editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a good Thursday.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests that share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.
Hello,
sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.